The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. It's your call for the best college football coverage. From National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between, CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Barton Simmons. That's Tom Fornelli. I'm Chip Patterson, and there's a lot to get to today. It's a bit of an exciting day here in the college football world. Yes, we do have some updates on the Michigan State job after Mark D'Antonio announced that he was stepping down. Yes, we do have some of your questions answered because it's a Mailbag Monday. And yes, it is the debut of the Cover 3 Book Club, so a lot to get to. Gentlemen, how are we feeling on this Monday afternoon?
I'm great, because now I could finally hear Barton.
That's right.
Yeah, we're minute one of the podcast, but minutes 18 of Barton dealing with technical stuff that Barton isn't very good at, so sorry, guys.
I mean, it is truly amazing that when the Yale graduate has to say he has to go
history
find a
major.
Nerd, the history, yeah, the history major from Yale, Mr. Ivy League, has to go find a nerd to get things fixed. But
nerds rule the world.
Nerds do rule the world. You're coming through, thanks to the hard work at 24/7 Sports to be able to get all this stuff done. So over the weekend, Luke Fickell, who we mentioned was going to likely be a target and likely going to be someone that Michigan State would look at, the question was, what would Luke Fickell want to do? So he entertained the job, spoke with Michigan State, but Michigan State did not secure the hire, though I'm sure that the next, whoever Michigan State hires, is probably going to be the only person we offered, because, you know, no jobs right. are ever offered until they're accepted. But Luke Fickell makes it very clear through back channels and sort of with his own commitment, I am staying with Cincinnati. So now the turn for Michigan State, if you're trying to get someone on right now, has included Brett Bielema, who it does not currently have a head coaching job. And then it has also included, I mean, didn't we hear Jim McElwain, who's over there at Central Michigan, if he would be able to get this opportunity? I mean, where is the Michigan State job search in your mind, I guess, Barton, in like, where are they right now? Are they in a healthy position?
Hell no.
Okay.
Man,
I didn't think so.
They're up the creek right now. And I honestly think that this is sort of the perfect job for Luke Fickell. But it had to come open a month or 2 months ago. And I totally understand, and I would expect, I would have been surprised, and we talked about it here, I would have been surprised if he had taken that job in February. But if this job was open next December or even this past December, I think it's like a no-brainer. But he's got probably the best team in the Group of Five. He's got definitely the best recruiting class in the Group of Five coming in. When USC comes open potentially, when maybe Lincoln Riley goes to the NFL and maybe Dan Mullen goes to the NFL, when whatever the crazy coaching carousel thing happens, Luke Fickell after this season where he's, you know, they could go 13-0 or something, he's going to be the number one guy. And so why leave? And you remember when you guys – I don't know about y'all, but when I would play like college football, NCAA football on Xbox or PlayStation, and you start at whatever small school and you sort of build up a team and then you change to the next one, it was always really tough to leave after you just signed some baller-ass recruiting class. And you were like, you know what? These guys are so good. I want to just play with these guys. Luke Fickell just signed a baller recruiting class. And it's not like coaches leave, but that's a really tough conversation to have when you just signed these guys. They are on campus in a lot of cases. And one of them is the highest rated group of five commit, and this kid, Evan Prater, that we've seen in years since Ed Oliver at Houston. So I get all that. So that's the Fickell thing for me. And then the other side of it is, okay, now who's going to come? I think Mike Tressel would just further sink Michigan State into this malaise. And then, Brett Bielema, maybe Jim McElwain. I think the only one left out there that seems, without sort of going into the coordinator ranks, of which I still think there's plenty of good ones out there, but in the head coach ranks, the only one that kind of makes sense that Mike would leave and is probably a good fit, I think Justin Wilcox makes sense. I mean, he's a defensive guy. I think you're not going to stay at Cal if you have an opportunity like Michigan State. There's just not enough football resources there, I don't think, to make it worth your while long term. I think if he gets a Michigan State opportunity, I think that's one that to me you jump whenever the time comes, regardless of when the time is.
But is Wilcox somebody who might think, like West Coast guy? I mean, he's from Oregon. He's coaching at Cal. Do you think that he'd want to come to East Lansing?
I mean, he's coached at Wisconsin. He's made stops outside of the West Coast.
Yeah, I just wonder if for him, though, now that he's got like a head coaching, because I mean, he was only at Wisconsin for a year and he was at Tennessee
for
a
while, right?
Yeah. So I just wonder if he would, considering he's already got a Power 5 gig. Now, obviously, money can be a great influencer, but I just wonder if, since he's already got a Power 5 gig and he's out on the West Coast, he's from the West Coast, if he would want to take another Power 5 gig in an area that he hasn't spent a ton of time in.
But didn't Sonny Dykes just basically say, like, yeah, you know what? I'm good on this Cal stuff. I'll leave and go coach SMU.
You're suggesting that it just might be one of those places where, like, you get there and you look around, and if you don't love being in Berkeley, that it might not be worth the squeeze?
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know, you look around and It's not exactly a rabid football environment out there in Berkeley. So, I mean, maybe Justin Wilcox likes that. You got some job security in a situation like that. But, yeah,
feel like he's in a position, too, where Cal might be pretty decent next year. So he's kind of like in a similar situation as Fickell, where it's like, I don't know if he's ready to kind of cut bait on that, because he might find himself in a similar position to Fickell next year, where maybe there's a better opportunity for him on the West Coast. Like, let's say Cal has a very good year and maybe Clay Helton doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, but would USC really go after it? I don't know, man. This strikes me as the next step up for Wilcox. That makes sense. I don't see Justin Wilcox getting, like, he could get a Michigan State equivalent job somewhere, and I'm sure those opportunities will be there, but I don't see Justin Wilcox being a top candidate. Now, maybe like a backup that they get to down the list, but a top candidate for like the blue blood jobs.
I just don't view Michigan State as a sexy enough job to pull a sitting Power 5 coach who's not already kind of looking to get out. You know what I mean? And especially if you look at a lot of the stuff that's gone on in that Michigan State athletic department the last few years. And I think, there was just a story in the Free Press about part of the reason Fickell turned down Michigan State was, the Nassar stuff and just the kind of culture going on in that athletic department the last few years that is really not interested in trying to help dig them out of. And that's why I wonder if that's not going to play a role with other coaches too, because I think that it's in a way, it's, you look at the stuff that has happened in that athletic department. And then there's also that factor of, you don't want to be the guy to replace the guy. And I know that things kind of had a bad end at the last few years where they were, you know, the highs, they were past their high point of being in the college football playoff. But I also think that when you look at what Mark D'Antonio was able to do at Michigan State, he's kind of like the guy. And I don't know if that's somebody you want to be replacing.
It's going to be tough for Michigan State. It's going to be tough for if Michigan State's administration, like if they continue to let this thing drag out, and if this continues to be a hiring process that takes a really long time and has lots of starts and stops and interviews and twists and turns, then it's going to be really tough for that administration, whoever the head coach is, to have a very high bar for expectation, because whoever is going to be leading this football program is going to have so many things stacked against them and so many other pieces that are still being tied up around the athletic department. Mm-hmm. Another one, Pat Narduzzi, also, you know, he came out and he did a very bad Photoshop of the Wolf of Wall Street. I loved it, Pat. It was great. Keep doing mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. We liked it. But so he decides he wants to stay at Pitt. You know, Luke Fickell wants to stay at Cincinnati. You know, you mentioned this recruiting
Mel Tucker
class.
Tucker decides he's going to stay at Colorado.
Wow. Like
Robert Saleh, the 49ers defense coordinator, decides he's going to backs off it or two.
That was never like a connection that made sense to me, because that dude's going to have an NFL gig within a year or two. So it's like when I saw his name, like as a, I was like, why? Why in the world would he leave what he has for Michigan State? It's not I don't mean that to sound bad about Michigan State. I just mean that's an NFL head coach right there. Why would he go to a college, Scott, right now?
When the job was opened, I was defending it as a top 25 job. And if my data is the responses of all these other head coaches, then I don't think Michigan State is a top 25 job right now. It can be a top 25 mm-hmm. job. It can be a top 15 job probably. But right now, based on the way that other head coaches, and timing is 100% a factor here, but just based on who these coaches are, the fact that they're all saying thanks but no thanks, I don't think Michigan State at this moment is a top 25 job.
I mean, I wonder if this is a situation where, you know, they kind of just need their Bill Cubitt or somebody, like, you know, just to take
a bullet.
Yeah, for a year and then go in fresh.
They're Matt Luke.
Yeah. And maybe that, like, you don't know. I mean, Mike Tressel might win games. Mike Tressel might be the guy. And you look around at what's available right now, or at least not what's available, but who's genuinely going to be interested. It's like, do we know that Burt is a huge upgrade over Mike Tressel at this point?
I don't.
I know he is in name value.
So I do think that's an interesting point, in that if you go Mike Tressel, you're almost saying, like, all right, we're going to take a shot on this guy, but if it isn't looking good, year one, year two, like we can move on him. We could give him a contract that's university friendly, and no one's gonna, you know, we're not gonna get too much heat for that. Whereas mm-hmm. if you go Bielema or anyone else outside the family, you have to give them basically a fair shake, and
like you can't give $16 million to Brett Bielema.
Yeah,
certainly. You certainly can't then fire him after 2 years and expect him to, you know, you certainly can't then expect him to win 8 or 9 games.
Yeah. I think what we'll continue to see, I mean, Michigan State is obviously making a lot of moves to try and make a hire, but I would not be surprised if we do end up right back with Mike Tressel as the star of the show when the Spartans take the field next year.
And then it'll be hilarious. Uh-huh. Yeah, that'd be. I mean, hey, why not? That's. I mean, there's still good coaches out there. That's the thing. It's just you gotta.
Yeah, there's no coach right now, I think, that Michigan State can hire where everybody's going to be happy with it. There's no home run hire to make. So you're either going into next season with Mike Tressel and people disappointed, or you're going in with somebody who people are going to be disappointed about, but costs a lot more money, and you're kind of tied to.
Or. Again, yeah, right. Like you could make a swing for a home run hire that isn't going to look like a home run when you hire him. Like just have faith in your hiring process and go say, Chris Creighton's the guy, or Jason Candle's the guy, or one of these stud coordinators out there is the guy, and just take your lumps up front that people aren't going to be happy with it initially. But it'd be hilarious if Mike Tressel was the coach, because now we're like 3 years in of everyone getting on Mark D'Antonio for not
firing
turning
his
over
assistants.
His staff. And then he's finally gone, and just an assistant pops up and keeps everyone in place. And I mean, that'd be the worst.
That's just paying it back, right? Football guy. Mark D'Antonio is a classic football guy.
Or just hire Jeff Monken and go option.
There you go. One quick mailbag question before we get into other headlines, because it factors right in. Question from T Time 126. What's the future of the program after Mark D'Antonio? Will Michigan State ever get back to the college football playoff?
Ever?
Will Michigan State ever get back to the CFP?
Like into the year 3000?
I mean,
I think they'll get there.
Yeah, they can.
I think Michigan State, absolutely. You could get a good hire.
Especially once it expands to like 32 teams and you got a really good shot.
That's right.
I think that Michigan State probably won't make the four-team playoff again before it expands to eight.
Probably will not. I think that expansion is their best bet going forward.
Yeah, there's six more years of the four-team playoff. I do not think Michigan State in these 6 years will make the college football playoff.
Yes, we're a few iterations of Michigan State away from them being a true playoff team in the sense that our man's talking about there. But it's just like it's a huge school. If you get someone in there that can recruit, it's got a good fan base. I mean, there's no reason to think Michigan State doesn't have a playoff ceiling, but we're a long way away from the steps that are necessary to get to that ceiling.
Let me follow that up, because I like the way this was sort of the way that was framed. So Michigan State probably not going to be making the college football playoff in the next 6 years. Those potentially could be the last 6 years of a 14 playoff. Do you think that the Michigan Wolverines will make the college football playoff in the next 6 years?
No.
I'm going to say yes. I'll be hopeful. I'm going to say, yeah, they can get one in the next 6 years. Harbaugh's got to have one. Jim Harbaugh will get one Michigan team to the college football playoff. They'll probably lose in the semifinals, but he's going to get an appearance.
But that is exactly the Michigan argument for everything, is this assumption of like, oh, Harbaugh, it's Harbaugh. I mean, I can't, you know, but it's got to, like, Harbaugh's got to do it at some point. He's got to beat Ohio State at some point. He's got to get in the playoffs at some point. He's got to get a quarterback at some point. Like, that's at some point we have to stop using that as an argument for Michigan.
No, my argument is that the teams have been good under Jim Harbaugh. He has had good football teams.
Yes. Yeah. Doesn't have a great team.
Has not had a great team. And that my bet on Michigan across the next 6 years is that one of these goods stumbles into being great.
I mean, I think Michigan's odds are far better than Michigan State's to make a 14 playoff. It's just I don't see the path right now in the next 6 years. I just think that unless Ohio State falls off a cliff, which is possible, maybe Ryan Day, you know, makes a wrong turn. But I just feel like right now it's in the Big Ten, it's either going to be Ohio State or somebody from the West who has a good season and has a good night against Ohio State in Indianapolis.
That's kind of the way I see it too. I think Ohio State's got to show a chink in the armor. It's recruiting. I mean, I'm going to need to see something change on the recruiting trail. Not that they're recruiting poorly, but I don't have confidence that they're recruiting good enough to make the playoffs. But look, I mean, maybe I'm being unfair, because making the playoffs and winning a national championship are different. And so
Jake Browning made the playoffs.
Right. I mean, yes, in the right year where the right team's down and, you know, you get the bounces you need and sure. I could see it. I just don't see national championship maybe is why I was being, maybe that's where I was meant to be more emphatic.
Do you think Penn State makes the college football playoff?
I think they're closer.
The
like, I think yeah. Penn State's closer to me. I don't know. Michigan's, who's been the better program, generally speaking, over the last, say, 4 years?
I give Penn State, if we can stretch it back to Penn State's Big Ten championship, I think the Big Ten championship matters. And they've got a couple of, like, other, like, a Rose Bowl, a Cotton Bowl. They've got a couple other, like, New Year's Six appearances that I think Michigan might be a little bit short of.
Yeah, it's weird because, on the one hand, Michigan has performed better against Penn State than it has like a lot of other top schools. But I still think that overall, Penn State's been the better program.
That's my hunch, too.
Yeah. But
without digging deep into the resumes, that's my impression, too.
And then I don't need to dig too deep into the resumes. I do think Ohio State's going to be in the college football playoff in the next 6 years.
Maybe, I would bet on that, yeah.
Maybe 4 or 5 times.
Maybe.
Maybe all 6. coming up on the other side, more of your questions and our answers next.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey, before we get into the mailbag, there is a few assistant coaching carousel stuff I kind of thought might be interesting to run through.
Yeah, nah.
Y'all good with that?
Yeah, for sure.
Should I dive in?
Yeah, go for it.
So I thought a couple interesting things started popping lately on the carousel. First of all, have y'all seen how this Tennessee staff has turned over?
Yes.
So I'll run through it here. Defensive line coach Tracy Rocker to South Carolina. Outside linebacker coach Chris Rumpf to the Texans. Inside linebacker Kevin Shearer to the Giants. I want to talk about that Giants staff in a minute. Wide receiver coach David Johnson to Florida State. Director of player personnel Drew Hughes to South Carolina. That's pretty serious turnover right there.
Yes.
They hired Jay Grand. They promoted Joe Osavet. They got Jimmy Brumbaugh from Colorado, Shelton Felton from Akron. So they filled them all, but like that's some serious movement there.
And all of that after getting a top 10 class on board.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Makes me wonder, is Pruitt just he comes from the Saban coaching tree. I bet he grinds those guys pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, it's like we've talked about it kind of in a way before. I just feel like you get the sense that working or playing for Jeremy Pruitt is not something anybody wants to do for more than 4 years.
I think I get the sense players like playing for him. But I think the coaching for him is, yeah, you're right. You probably want to do it because he's a good coach, but
if he
you don't
will
want
help
to do
you
it
become a better coach, but he is a demanding right. coach.
Right, right. So, and then South Carolina, South Carolina, I thought I wrote this down. Here we go. Yeah, so they hired Drew Hughes. They hired Tracy Rocker. They lost Matt Lindsey. Ole Miss stole Matt Lindsey, their director of player personnel, and hired Lane Kiffin, hired him as a GM. And that's sort of a significant move because Matt Lindsey's really highly regarded. So is Drew Hughes for that matter. But Matt Lindsey sort of is a, like, he worked with the Eagles and Chip Kelly guy, and he's been with Will Muschamp for a while. So that he left for Ole Miss, I thought was interesting. And then they lose, I guess, I don't know if this is official yet, but Brian McClendon appears to be on his way out to the NFL. Maybe Thomas Brown is heading to the Rams, their running backs coach. And then John Scott Jr., after 1 year, their defensive line coach, heads to Penn State to replace Sean Spencer, who heads to the Giants. Can we talk about the Giants staff for a second?
Okay.
All right, Joe Judge of the Giants.
Mississippi right. State coaching candidate Joe Judge.
Mississippi State coaching front runner Joe Judge, head coach of the Giants. All right. His coaching staff. All right. Offensive coordinator, Jason Garrett, Princeton guy. Defensive coordinator, Pat Graham, Yale guy. Ivy League coordinators. So we're off to a good start here. And then after that, he's got special teams coordinators, Thomas McGoffey, who has been in the NFL a bunch, but was a LSU special teams coordinator for like 3 years in the early 2010s. Then he's got Burton Burns, who's his running backs coach. Burton Burns has coached all the studs at Alabama. He's been an off-the-field guy for Alabama the last couple of years.
Wait. Burton Burns isn't a NASCAR driver?
No, far from it. Freddie Kitchens, former SEC assistant, as a tight ends coach and former Alabama quarterback.
And Browns head coach.
And Browns head coach, obviously. Derek Dooley, former Tennessee head coach, is an off-field offensive assistant. Sean Spencer, former Vanderbilt D-line coach, Penn State D-line coach, is the D-line coach. Kevin Shearer, they hired from Tennessee. He was the inside linebackers coach. Brett Bielema, as we all know, from Arkansas, Wisconsin, et cetera, is the outside linebackers coach. Jody Wright, who was director of player personnel for a long time at Alabama, is a defensive assistant. So you look at this New York Giants coaching staff, and you're like, holy cow, this is a couple really good coordinators and a bunch of stud recruiters. Man, this team's going to crush it in the SEC. And then you're like, oh, this is for the NFL? Well, that'll be interesting. It's like, I don't know what to make of it, but it's like this all-star college cast.
They're going to be killing it on the recruiting trail.
Someone needs to tell Joe Judge that you draft in the NFL.
I think that sounds
undrafted,
like,
free agents. You got to recruit them.
I feel like that's 100% hit rate, right? If you pick somebody, they pick you right back.
That's right.
Yeah, it's easiest recruiting there is. So is most of the assistant coaching turnover post National Signing Day, like our conversations about National Signing Day? Most of this movement is either in the SEC or at the very few non-SEC recruiting powerhouses.
The heavy movement is there's like two other ones of note. Tim Brewster,
Florida.
So North Carolina lost Tim Brewster to Florida, which I think is a good sign for Dan Mullen as he tries to get into these big time recruiting battles, because Tim Brewster's been a big game hunter on the recruiting trail back to his days with Mac Brown. And UNC doesn't really use a tight end anyways, so it makes sense for him to bounce. So I think that's a big hire for Florida to sort of put the foot on the gas in recruiting. Sean Snyder of K-State fame is heading to USC. That's going to be interesting to see a Snyder outside of Manhattan, Kansas. And then Rutgers just keeps on loading up with Princeton guys. They got Sean Gleason, the former Princeton OC. Their offensive line coach is the Princeton OC from this past year. And then they just added like the Princeton running backs coach as a quality control, like off-field or offensive assistant. So Rutgers may look a little bit like Princeton. A lot of Princeton guys getting jobs this cycle.
What does that mean for their outlook? Is Princeton just like constantly turning in like a 5-5 season?
No, Princeton's been pretty good lately.
Okay.
And their offense has been really creative. And so you could see some cool stuff.
In, backdoor cuts.
Yeah, Princeton's got a Princeton offense joke. It's sitting there somewhere.
That's right. So anyways, I had to, sorry for geeking out on assistant coaching carousel, but it's been kind of interesting the last couple weeks.
I would say the note that I will probably take away from that report is to not be so hasty with my enthusiastic Tennessee support going into 2020.
Yeah. Maybe. I was fully ready to be like on the Tennessee band.
But how much does that really change things for y'all? I mean,
not too much. But coaching turnover, I feel like consistency is always a good thing for any team. It's not exactly something that I think is necessary or, you know, like a foundational thing for success. But I feel like it boosts success, and that if you have to constantly churn staff, sometimes it's a lot harder. But again, Nick Saban seems to do okay with it.
I think that in the SEC, when we're talking about the smallest margins for error, and you're looking at a schedule that's probably going to have five or six toss-ups on it when you're doing your win total calculation, that detail, that little development on the coaching staff side, that might be enough for me to make one out of every, you know, eight times I run the simulation in my head break the other way. So it's a factor. It's not the factor, but it's a factor when trying to figure out what I'm expecting from the Vols.
Maybe Pruitt just thrives on that, though. You know,
these
guys come in, they're going to coach his style, and he's going to chew them up and spit them out a couple years later and get a few new guys to coach his style. Well, it'll be it. We'll find out this year.
We'll find out this year. All right, to the mailbag. This one from Cludmo. Coach Fritz, Willie Fritz, had some good success at the D2 level at the University of Central Missouri. He seemed to perform even better when he moved to the FCS and now FBS, as he has more access and resources and better athletes. What Power 5 teams do you think he could have the most success at, and how could he compete with playoff contenders? Willie Fritz, Power 5 jobs, what would be a good fit, and could he run with the big dogs?
That's obviously directed. You may not have been specifically directed at him, but inherently that is a Tom Fornelli question.
I mean, this isn't a thing about Eli Drinkwitz, but I think Mizzou should have hired Willie Fritz. Honestly, I feel like that's the kind of job where he would do good at, because I think if any Power 5 school is going to hire Fritz, it can't be one of the big dog teams that are competing for playoff spots, that, you know, recruiting lifeblood kind of thing. I think it has to be one of the second tier kind of Power 5 schools in this situation, because Fritz is the guy that needs to bring in his system and bring in his guys and build it up, whereas he's just a good coach. So if you look, I would say it's not a particular school, but, you know, I thought Willie Fritz would have been a good hire for Kansas State. They clearly looks like they made a good hire last year. I think that he would be a good hire for a lot of those kinds of teams. So Missouri, Kansas State, you know, if we're looking elsewhere in the Big Ten, I think Texas Tech would be a good place for Willie Fritz. In the Big Ten, we're talking about your Indianas, your Illinois, your Purdue's. I don't know if he's really, he's never really coached on the West Coast, so maybe the Pac-12 wouldn't be a great fit. But I just think that that's the kind of school that you're looking at where Willie Fritz would probably be the most successful. Again, I don't think he's going to be going anywhere and winning conference title after conference title and competing for playoff bursts, but I do think that he's a good program builder who could put together a very successful program to be proud of.
What about a Michigan State? What do you think about that?
I would be perfectly happy with that. I would be thrilled with that. I think Willie could win there. I don't know if Michigan State fans would be happy with that.
Doesn't seem like the type that they're going for.
No.
There are a lot of great football coaches that teach the game at just an elite level, but running a college football program that is competing for national championships involves a lot more that you need to bring to the table besides just coaching ball.
Mm-hmm.
And Willie Fritz is clearly, based on his resume, one of the best at just teaching the game, and especially teaching his offense and the kind of football teams that he wants to put together. But if you're talking about like running with playoff contenders, I don't even know if Willie Fritz is interested in all that it takes to do that. You know, he might just be comfortable coaching ball. And if he can do that and make good living, then that might be enough for him. I will say that if Willie Fritz shows up at any of those sort of like the, because what you were mentioning with your Illinois, your Indiana, your Kansas State, your Texas Tech, you're just basically talking about the like the fringe or just outside of the in club. Like they're not the popular kids in the conference. They're not the ones that get to sit at the best table when the whole conference gets together for retreats. But, you know,
like that, they're invited to the party, but nobody's like saying their name when they walk in the door.
Right. Exactly.
Like, hey, it's Illinois here.
Yeah. You're going to have a little bit of a chip on the shoulder, and a Willie Fritz, like we're just going to out execute you, is a good type of football team for a chip on the shoulder school. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know about national championships. All right, let's do this little proposition from J Egg Zero. Who do you see being the first to overtake the champion in their respective conference? And these were what he offered. Feel free to substitute. Florida State over Clemson, Texas over Oklahoma, Michigan over Ohio State, Auburn over Alabama, or USC over Oregon. Which is number one, wow, we've already cemented Oregon as the
right
the Pac-12 powerhouse. But yeah, I mean, which of those do you think seems like it'll be the next one to happen?
So I think there's two ways of looking at this. I think you look at it in terms of just which is the first one to do it in a single year. And then the other way to look at it is which one is the first to do it to where they are the class of the conference.
Okay.
Because I think that's Texas, it could happen next year, you know. Clearly the answer to me on that is either Texas or USC. If I got to pick one, I'm probably going Texas. I think if we're talking about over an extended period of time, who was the first to become the premier team in that conference over the other, I would say USC.
Yeah.
Yep.
It wouldn't take much for USC to get back.
Right. Right. And you know what? Florida State over Clemson. I say like I'm pushing that off, but it's not because I don't believe in Mike Norvell getting Florida State to a good level. You're just talking about supplanting Clemson.
Like, that's a tall mountain to climb.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Florida State can get to a place where it could be a top 10 team in not too long, but you're talking about moving Clemson out of the way. Texas over Oklahoma, I agree. That could happen at any one time, though Oklahoma probably does have the more long-lasting power that's been established in the Big 12 era. Michigan over Ohio State, 15 out of 16, get out of here. And Auburn over Alabama. Auburn's done it. Like they've done it once. You know, they've won the SEC West. You know, they've won a couple Iron Bowls. They've, you know, Gus Malzahn's had a nice little taste of success against Nick Saban. But you can't tell me that Auburn is going to be moving Alabama out of the way. That conversation has to also involve an LSU or a Georgia or a Florida.
Yeah, I think Auburn is the likelier for any given season to do it, because I mean, well, we just saw Alabama didn't win the division this year, and it's not won its division a couple times the last few years. But I agree. I think long term, if we're just talking about to take over as the premier program in the conference, I think USC over Oregon is the most logical way to go in this question.
All right. This question's from WDE Frank. Sounds like an Auburn fan. Auburn
flavor. Who does he root for?
outside of the returning Tier 1 quarterbacks, which he has defined as Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields, if you could take one quarterback from any school and magically transfer them to another with no penalty, who would you move and to where for the 2020 season? Is there anyone who could propel a good team into a contender? Love the show. Can't wait for the book club.
Nice. Love our book club enthusiasts. I got three.
Okay. Nice.
Okay. One is Sam Howell at North Carolina to Penn State.
Don't take my... Ooh. Why are you taking Sam Howell from me?
I had Sam Howell too, but it's not to Penn State.
So look, I mean, hey, Sam Howell's a good quarterback. North Carolina's gonna have a chance to go 9-3 next year because Sam Howell's a good quarterback. But Penn State needs a quarterback to win a national championship. They're close enough to be competing for national championships if they could just get an elite quarterback. And I think that'd be a nice gift to college football if North Carolina wouldn't mind just hand them over. So we'll let you as a North Carolina alum chew on that and think through it as I give you my second quarterback that could give us a national championship. Let's give JT Daniels, who's sitting on the bench anyways, to Steve Ensminger at LSU. You know, I'm not super confident in Miles Brennan. LSU, for whatever reason, has not taken too many swings in the transfer portal. I think that JT Daniels, based on his skill set, just sort of the quick release, the ability to distribute sort of in a point guard kind of way, fits what they did a lot this year at LSU. I think that could be fun. And then my last one, sorry, Texas fans, I know you probably think that Sam Ellinger isn't just a quarterback on a solid team that needs an upgrade, but Oregon could really use a quarterback as well. And I think for the good of college football, Sam Ellinger would be better utilized at Oregon.
Wow, taking an iconic Texas quarterback.
Make him an iconic Oregon quarterback.
I mean, I haven't seen just some kind of dirt from Texas to Oregon since, what was his name, Willie Lyles?
That's right.
Yes. Yeah.
Lake Seastrunk.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, okay. Lot to chew on there. I'm still heard about Sam Howe. All right, Tom, where are you sending Sam Howe?
I was going to go back in time and reverse some decisions. I was going to send Sam Howell to Florida State.
Oh, his original.
Under Mike Norvell, just kind of see how quickly he could get things going with Sam Howell there. And another one.
On that one, though, just, you know, the nice thing about Mike Norvell is he did sign a couple quarterbacks. And Brock Purdy, who would have been the freshman All-American for everybody, if not for Trevor Lawrence 2 years ago, his little brother, Chuba, is on his way to Florida State. So, you know, I while I agree Sam Howell at Florida State would be and would have been fun, I'm sort of excited for the Chuba era in Tallahassee.
Another one I had, which is somewhat canceled out because they went and got Jamie Newman, but I feel like Tanner Morgan at Minnesota would have been perfect quarterback for Georgia.
To just keep being Jake Fromm?
I think to be a better Jake Fromm in a way. But I think that, you know, I don't think that's a huge – I don't know if he'd really turn them into a title contender because I kind of already considered Georgia to be that. But I thought that was an interesting fit. But my other one is I took Kadon Slovis and put him at Penn State just because I don't know if USC is going to be ready to win a national title by the time he leaves for the NFL. And I think that maybe throwing him at Penn State would be – a way to accelerate what the Nittany Lions are doing. And the quarterback I had going to Oregon was not Sam Ellinger, but Jaden Daniels from Arizona State.
Mm.
Oh man, you're just gonna
put Sorry,
a stop
Herm.
To all the Herm Edwards Mo. All our love of Arizona State is just gonna I don't know how I feel about that. Who was the second one you mentioned again? I wanted to ask you about him.
It was Tanner Morgan at Georgia.
Okay. So, here's a question for you. You said you think he could be an upgrade. Do you think if Jake Fromm was at Minnesota this past year and Tanner Morgan was at Georgia this past year, how do you think the fortunes of those two teams would have been different?
I think they wouldn't have been all that different. I think Fromm's numbers would have been better at Minnesota because I think that PJ Fleck would have let him do more. And I think that Morgan might have found himself in a similar situation that Fromm was in at Georgia where he's kind of more reined in. Because I think Tanner Morgan's greatest strength is his ability to push the ball down the field, because he's very good at that. And of course, he also had a couple very good targets to be able to do that with at Minnesota. So I think that if Georgia is serious about, you know, and again, we talked about this before, we are a pro Georgia podcast with Todd Monken there now, I think that Tanner Morgan going to that offense could be very much Brandon Whedon-ish with, like he had at Oklahoma State for, you know, the Bulldogs. So I that was just the kind of thing, because I think Tanner Morgan is a very good quarterback that doesn't really get a whole ton of attention simply because he's Minnesota, and obviously Minnesota just had a great season, so people are more aware of him. But it's just, the further I dig in on him, the more impressed I get, and I feel like if he was playing at a premier program, he'd be somebody whose NFL draft hype would have already started.
That's interesting. I'm interested in the concept that Tanner Morgan would be or could be an upgrade from Jake Fromm. I'd never thought of that. You know, that's an interesting thing to think about.
I would put, do you think that Dillon Gabriel would get crushed in the SEC? I could put him on a bus from Orlando to Gainesville.
Yes.
Okay.
I listen, there's a lot I like about Dillon Gabriel, but there is a whole lot of just chuck the ball up in his game.
Yeah.
That I think that
he's tiny too.
Step up. Yeah.
You're going to put him on a bus from Orlando to where?
Gainesville.
Okay.
Going back to Tanner Morgan, if you look at the top four quarterbacks in the country in efficiency rating this year, Joe Burrow was number one. Jalen Hurts was number two. Justin Fields was number three. Tanner Morgan, 3 points behind Justin Fields in fourth in the country.
Yeah,
averaging over 10 yards an attempt.
But he certainly had a more friendly offense than Jake mm-hmm. Fromm for a quarterback.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I bet you can't send Jake Fromm up north, though, because Jake Fromm has small hands, and that's going to be an issue on the deep ball. But sending Tanner Morgan down south, that could be interesting.
All right, are you guys book club time?
4 years.
Oh, I had Dillon Gabriel going from UCF Florida. To Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, y'all...
I would take Trevor Lawrence and send him to Champaign.
I would... I would take Justin Fields and put him at Oregon. I would take Sam Howell and I would send him to Texas. Is Sam Howell an upgrade at Texas over Sam Ellinger?
I can't get there. I mean, maybe, but you can't do that to Sam Ellinger.
I don't think sophomore year Sam Howell is better than a possible senior year Sam Ellinger. I think that senior Sam Howell might be better than senior Sam Ellinger.
Buddy, we ain't seeing senior Sam Howell.
That's what I'm saying. I think that he's got a much higher ceiling.
All right. Well, here we go. Live. Let's open the door and let's take a look into the Cover 3 Book Club.
At first, I thought that you hired like a choir to sing the Cover 3 Book Club jingle, but then I realized they were the Oompa Loompas. It's like a choir of Oompa Loompas.
Yeah, it's a percussive choir.
It's great.
Yeah,
good jingle, man.
You're up. What's the first edition of the Cover 3 Book Club?
Look, I thought it would only be fitting to start the Cover 3 Book Club off with the book that inspired the Cover 3 Book Club, which is Range by David Epstein, okay? So the Cover 3 Book Club is going to be, since we're friends, you know, the three of us are friends, all of our listeners are our friends as well, We're fairly like-minded, with the exception of when our eyes glaze over as Tom talks about soccer. But
how dare you?
But other than that, you know, this is the off season. This is reading season, because otherwise all we're doing is watching football in our spare time. So it's good to have recommendations from our friends. So the Cover 3 Book Club is going to be our weekly recommendation. And I would encourage 5-star reviews and our listeners to give us some recommendations as well. So, anyways, Range by David Epstein. Here's why I love it. I love this book. Here's why. So I read The Range by David Epstein, which is about generalists in a world of specialization. And the reason I loved it is because I looked at it from a personnel player development standpoint. Like, I'm always big on guys that play multiple sports. I feel like that's a big indicator of future success. And so I read it because I thought it was going to sort of be a book all about that. In actuality, it's got like one chapter of that. And the rest of the book is just about all the different ways of experiences and the ways you can sort of enrich things by not specializing, and how that can help you in all sorts of different tasks without you realizing it, and sort of the and so as I go through like what we do, and I'm just sitting there like thinking about how, you know, I got to be watching as much football as possible, and I got every book I got to read has to be about football, and like, if I'm not doing that, what's the point? Like, if I'm not reading about like parenting or my work, like, am I just wasting my time? But I think the thing I took away from Range is that it sort of empowers you to experience as much as you can as late as you want, because it's all applicable. Like, if you want to read a book about whatever, World War I, it has nothing to do with football, but like, there's lessons you can learn that you can apply, and you can solve problems using the different things that you learn from different books or from different experiences. Like, the other thing I think about is when I was in college, like, I took a fifth year, and I was like the 23-year-old guy going to the 22-year-old guy on campus or whatever. And I felt like I was so old, and I just wanted to just get out of there and get in the workplace, because I felt like all my friends were like getting ahead of me, and I was just like the creep at the college parties. And that's true. It was good to get out of college, but like, I shouldn't have been in a rush to get some sort of real job, which I got, which I hated. Like, you could go play, like, some of my buddies played football in Europe, and it was just a 6-month vacation. But like, the experiences and different perspectives you get over there, you know, you can take and add that to any scenario. And so I love the idea now of just sort of being, you know, everything counts. You know, just because you take a trip overseas somewhere and you're taking a week off of work, like, whatever you pick up from that trip, you can sort of apply to any job you have in different ways. I really like the book because of the way it sort of empowers you to just experience. And so I'm going to read about whatever I want.
Do you have any chapter that stood out that really resonated with you, or like any particular story?
There really are. They're all good. I mean, I've used the quote, good judges are great belief updaters a lot. Like, that really resonates with me, because so often we get like hunkered down into our opinions, and just everything we do is then built to strengthen that opinion, as opposed to just gathering more information and being willing to accept that information and change and let that influence you in a different way. And so that's been something that I really kind of, that probably is my favorite line from that book. But there's all kinds of great stuff. It talks about the difference between like the Tiger Woods method of
specialization.
Yeah, like specializing in golf and the way he built up it, and how golf and chess and some of these activities are very, you know, specialization can really benefit you. But then the Roger Federer version was like he never really played all sorts of sports. His parents didn't let him focus in and really do serious competition until later in his life. And all those different elements of athleticism really helped his game, and the drive to compete helped his game because he didn't get burnt out on it when he was like 6 years old or like 10 years old going on the national tennis circuit or whatever. So parents out there that are, you know, your kids are doing ladder drills 12 months out of the year to get ready for their football season, I think you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, it's funny. I've read Range as well. And I read it right after I read another book called Peak, which is, it's like a yin and yang kind of thing, because Peak is a book that kind of talks about the whole Tiger Woods method and like deliberate practice and specialization, and how if a person spends a lot of time, particularly if you start your, you know, like a kid young and have them specialize in one thing, that's the best way to become, you know, a savant or a genius or an expert, whatever kind of word you want to use for that one particular thing. And there's like science and studies that show that this is capable and this is how it works. Like, you know, Mozart wasn't just some kid that was born that knew how to play all these instruments and write music. It's like literally all he did from a very young age, and it became who he was because of it. And then you go into Range, which is like Barton talked about, where it, you know, it covers pretty much the benefit of being well-rounded, of not just focusing on one thing. And I think the best way to summarize the message behind it is never stop learning, I feel like, is a way to do it. Just don't settle for any one thing and say, okay, that's the way this is, or think of who you're, even not just, I'm talking about forming an opinion, but thinking of who you are as a person. Don't say, you know, Chip, I'm a podcaster, I'm a college football writer. Barton, I'm, you know, the recruiting guy for 24/7. Tom, you're, you know, a college football writer. Don't ever just decide that's who you are and focus on being that, because there's, you know, you can still do all those things while still learning a whole lot more about a whole lot of different things. And there's other ways to learn. And like you said, too, like with traveling, I always felt like traveling the world is one of the best things anybody can do, just as far as getting new perspectives on the way that the world works. Because if you look at how our lives go, so much of the time we're kind of focused on that one thing that's the most important thing in our life at the moment, whether it's our relationships or whether it's our jobs, whatever. And you don't often think about how the world works for other people in other situations. And I think that doesn't really do us a whole lot of good. So after reading those two books, I'm much more strongly identified with Range than I did with Peak, although I think both have very good points and things that are worth considering. I think that Range is probably the quote unquote better way to go about things.
So, and to relate it to football too. So we talked with Stephen Prather, who's from Sports Source Analytics, who does a bunch of coaching stuff. And one of the things he always talks about too is like, A, most important thing for a coach about, beyond all the X and O stuff, is hire someone smart. And, and he also says like, and I think this is a great point, is it's important. I think it's like coaches will, a lot of coaches, not all, but a lot of coaches are like, you know, they take that workout every day really seriously. They got to get their workout in, you know, to get their, to be sharp and stay disciplined on that front. I really think for anybody, but especially for coaches too, you know, it's okay for your 17-hour grind work day where you're in at 5 a.m. and you're leaving at 11 p.m. As much as those coaches grind themselves out, like if they're not budgeting in, hey, like a little bit of time in the morning or whatever, just read a non-football book. Like I think that helps sharpen their mind, and I think it's something that's important for everybody. Like, and how about, you know, Scott Frost hiring Matt Lubick away from the credit union, and hey, that dude's probably bringing some great spreadsheet details, Excel expertise he didn't have when he was a coach. So like the switching of career paths is also a central theme in Range as well, because it's just, you know, talks about how, you know, and which is why in a lot of ways I think coaching hires should be outside the box as well. You know, look at what Lance Leopold's done at Buffalo. You know, he didn't have the experience of FBS coaching, but I bet he took a lot of those things, and he's smart, and he learned from the D3 level and can relate them really well. I just think that those sort of things are things you can kind of take from range.
I like when coaches start passing around a book. You can tell that they don't read many books about non-football stuff, but when they find one that they like and it starts working its way around. Like, remember when everybody got on The Energy Bus by John Gordon? Yeah, every football coach was
Energy Vampires
was swearing by The Energy Bus and passing it around and talking about it. Hey, you know what? Maybe the Cover 3 Book Club Cover 3 will be a source for coaches to find the next book that's going to take the whole scene and industry by storm. Maybe if it's not already, maybe it's going to be Range with David Epstein.
Hey, should be. Be smart to do it.
I've got a book to read, and now the listeners do too. Both of you have. And I could add Peak too. It's complimentary content right there. Tom will be up next week in the book club. We'd like to thank you for joining, especially for this entire mailbag episode. So if you have a recommendation for the book club, you can do that by giving us a 5-star review. Leave the recommendation in there. We'll add it to the book club. Might even read it, come back and talk about it. If you want to get in a question for a future mailbag, you can do that with a 5-star review as well. You can follow him on Twitter at Barton Simmons. You can follow him at Tom Fornelli. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good day.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.